which is a country Mike never wanted to go back to, but we did. And anyway, because it was really hot, we went there in the middle of July. But so we had more training. Then we came back and we saw all of you. And then we were placed on hold. And the reason being is that we were supposed to go to Benin, West Africa. But because of Ebola, we had to detour to a different country. Because Mercy Ships really is a surgical ship. It provides operations, and we could not be at risk with patients and crew getting the virus. So lucky for us, we found another country, which was Madagascar. And we were very surprised about that, but we were very grateful that we were able to get into the country quickly, which usually takes about 6 months to prepare, but we were able to get in there very quickly. So we met the ship down in Cape Town, and we got on the ship. And can you pull up the first slide? So we got on the ship, and we were greeted by all our friends that we met at the IOC. Our door was decorated, and we were so excited. We saw the ship pull in Cape Town, and we got on board, and it was just a great reunion. Then we had to do a different job than what we were initially assigned to do, and anyway, we did that, and I forgot something about why I personally did this mission. Mercy Ships does have a mission statement that they follow the 2,000-year-old model of Jesus providing hope and healing to the forgotten poor. And their values are love Jesus, love others, be people of integrity, and be excellent in all that we say and do. Now, for me personally, I did this because of what Jesus taught his disciples in the parable of the sheep and goats. And it's from Matthew 25, verse 37 to 40. There the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. So that was my motivation. I did it because I love Jesus. Anyway, so what was my job on the ship? Can you go to the next slide? This was my job and Mike's job. Did you have another slide? Well, anyway, I worked in the galley. I learned how to slice cheese and slice meat. I'm really good on the slicer now. I can chop carrots without chopping off my fingers, so that was good. And Mike worked in the dining room. On our way from Cape Town to Madagascar, the Indian Ocean is very, very choppy, and we had 30-degree rolls. And so there were some injuries and a lot of seasickness, but we made it there safely. Then, when we got there, we started our real jobs, or what we signed up to do. I was a hospital day crew coordinator, and I managed 120 Malagasy day crew. And they kept telling me that this was the hardest job on the ship. Well, they were wrong, because it was not the hardest job on the ship. It was probably the most rewarding job on the ship. They're wonderful people, they're hard workers, their language is a little strange. For instance, when you say welcome, you say Tongasua. When you say hello, it's Salama Timku. When you say no, it's si. When you say yes, it's I. And you're going, man, this is a strange language. It doesn't sound anything like I know. But you learn a few words and you get by, and they're very tolerant of your Malagasy. They would always reinterpret what I'd say to patients, so obviously I was not saying it right. So the Malagasy people, the day crew, would interpret for us, for the nurses and the doctors, and they would interpret for the patients and the caregivers. Well, you can imagine, so they're listening to people from 35 different countries, all speaking English, but you have the Aussie English, you have the British English, you have American English with a Southern accent, you have American English with a Boston accent, you have West African English, so it's, you can imagine all the nuances of what they're hearing, but they were really good. They would interpret to the patients what we were saying to the patients as far as their surgical procedures and what to expect, and they in turn would interpret to us what the patients were saying. So it was a big job, a very important job. Of course, you know, they were not angels, and I did have to correct some of them. Unfortunately, I had to let a few go. But other than that, they were great. They really did want to work alongside us, providing the care that the Malagasy people really needed. And all that care was free. All the surgical procedures were free, the food was free, the medicine was free, the treatment was free, everything. When they got on the ship, we would take their money and put it away and lock it away and tell them, you pay for nothing. You walk on the ship, everything is free. And they were just amazed, because in Madagascar, everything you had to pay for. So, oh, okay. So if you want to go to the next slide. So even though I'm only 5'4½", 5'5", I was a giant next to the Malagasy people. They're very little. So they're in, but they're very nice. One thing I did do was I taught them community health education, which was really a wonderful opportunity for me to share knowledge about clean water and worms and sexual transmitted diseases and HIV. And they, in turn, would teach the patients and the caregivers about clean water, worms. That was like train the trainer. And they also went out to their schools, their churches, their families, their communities, and taught this as well. When we left, they actually were working with the international medical teams out in the bush, again, teaching all this healthcare. So it was a really wonderful program. And I think the most interesting statement I got when I was teaching them about worms was, doesn't everybody have them? So, and they did, unfortunately, everybody had worms. So can you put the next slide? That's me teaching. And we had teaching tools for them to utilize when they were teaching the patients. Can you go on the next slide? Also, there were programs to teach doctors and nurses in the country different surgical procedures. They had a program for nurses to work alongside the nurses on the ship so that they can learn about how to take care of patients that had surgeries. They taught them about sterile technique. They had a sterilization program. They had a neonatal resuscitation program. So they were giving a lot back to Madagascar as well, to the healthcare professionals. I did mentor, train a new daycare coordinator, and then I went to admissions. Can you, one more slide. And this is the admissions team. We were in a tent, and so we were able to meet all the patients prior to coming on the ship. There were physicians that would come down and to the tent and examine them and say that they were okay for surgery. As nurses, we did their vital signs, we did their labs, we welcomed them to the ship, we explained what to expect when they went on the ship into the hospital. They were very frightened, as you can imagine, with a bunch of white folks taking care of a bunch of Malagasy folks. So a lot of them never saw a white person before. So they were frightened. We tried to allay their fears and welcome them and pray with them. We prayed with everybody that came through that door. And so we really enjoyed meeting them. And then after the surgeries, we would go and visit them, see how they were doing. So it was nice to see the before and after picture. Some of the challenges working on a ship like that was living in community with 450 people from 35 different countries, as you can imagine. And we shared everything from cars to meals to germs. So everybody would spread the love, so to speak. And of course, living in a third world country, you have a lot of unpaved roads, and that was a challenge. The language, of course, was difficult, and of course, Mike will tell you all about the heat. Benefits of working on Mercy Ships, we met a lot of fabulous people, wonderful, wonderful Christians. And working in a Christian organization, we were able to witness miracles and pray for these people and saw the power of the Holy Spirit healing these people with horrendous, horrendous problems. But you know what, our Lord, anything is possible for him, right? And also the Malagasy people, they were great to work with. I loved them dearly. I could have taken them all home with me if I could have. And also working with other mission groups within the country, it was fabulous to partner with them. So that's my statement. Mike is going to take over now and tell you a little bit about what he did.
I still might be spreading the love, but I've been on antibiotics now for a few weeks, so I should be okay. For those of you who know me, you're pretty lucky because that's my notes for the sermon. So we're pretty quick this morning. Yes, it's good to be back. It's quite an experience. If you go to the next slide, I think it's a blank one. The ship has 450 crew from 35 countries, and three times a week, new crew comes, maybe 20 people, 30 people, 5 people, and people leave, so people, they're gone. Well, I ate dinner with them. Where did they go? You know, and it's like they're just gone. There's this constant flow of people, plus about 250 Malagasies that they hire that work on this ship as primarily translators, but they work in the kitchen. They do housekeeping, chaplains, all kinds of different things. So I told people, I think maybe I wrote this home, if you don't believe in God, you know, and I don't even want to get into what you may or may not believe in or theology, come to this ship because it can't possibly work without God. I've been a consultant for 30 years, and I've worked with probably 100 different organizations. I've read lots of books. There is no organization on this planet that even just tiny bit resembles what this thing does. It just doesn't work. And many times I remember sitting outside with one of the security guy, and he would go, you know, this ship should probably be on the bottom of the ocean. It's probably got a big hole in the bottom, but God's keeping it afloat, because how does this all work? We're all the human blood bank for the ship. I mean, that's where they get the blood. They get it from the crew to give to these people. Mr. Zamboni, I think, needed 17 pints of blood. So, excuse me, you witness miracles every day. Every day. So go to the first slide, if you would. Dental. We saw over 5,000 patients for dental care. Now, think about that. That's a lot. We were only there. Dental started around, I'll say, mid-November through May. That's a lot of patients. They used to have an eye program. They did do some eye work, but their eyes seemed to be really good in Madagascar for some reason. So some of those people were disappointed because they had to go home. But if you're a dentist, boy, they'd love to have you come. So 5,200 people. Most of them don't have that many teeth to work on, so it makes it easy. But I think at the beginning, the average number, they would extract 7 or 8 teeth was the average per person. 5,000 plus people. Next slide. 1,200 life-changing surgeries, 1,200 in like 5 months. 5 operating rooms operating 5 days a week. Surgeons coming from all over the world, maybe for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Mr. Zamboni with the, well, it's this side, I guess, with the thing, his was 12 hours. Many of the surgeries are much less. But they only do a few kinds of surgery. A lot of those maxillofacial, I think they're pronounced, and a lot of orthopedic. We saw kids with bowed legs and club feet, and I got to stand in and witness an orthopedic surgery, and it's a good thing I didn't become an orthopedic surgeon, because I'm like, I think I better go. Because it is like, they are, you know, but and it's easy when you're little, but when you're an adult, you know. So 1,200 plus surgeries, it's amazing. Next slide. So some of the biggest challenges, patient transportation, getting patients to the ship is the biggest challenge. The island is the third largest island in the world. 23 million plus people live in Madagascar. We were in the port city of Tamasina, and 250,000 people. So in order to, you know, we could take care of all those people pretty quick, we needed a bigger group. And like Susan said, there's no roads. And the road, I mean, there's a couple of roads, but, you know, if you got out of 30 miles an hour, you were doing really good. So it just took a long time to get people there. The MAF stands for the Missionary Asian Fellowship. It's not the Missionary Air Force, but we worked very closely with the Missionary Air Fellowship. A bunch of Dutchies, I believe, most of them were. And they had a couple of fixed-wing planes, but they don't really do much good because there's no place to land. But they helped bring people in. And then the Helium mission out of Switzerland had two helicopters there, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Again, living in community, it's tough. You know, it's just a lot of people, and there's not a lot of space. We're staying at somebody's house who's here right now, and I was saying, gosh, this shower, because we were limited to a two-minute shower daily. I go, this shower stall is bigger than our whole bathroom. And there was two heads coming down, and I could turn the water on. It was so nice. And leave it run, because we had to turn it on and then shut it off. And then some of the other challenges Susan alluded to, the language, the money. On the ship, everything's on the 24-hour clock, so dinner's at 1700. It's the date. We don't go June 14th, we go 14 June, and everything's, you know, everybody's wrong except us, but they're all using metrics. So, well, how many kilometers did you drive? How many liters of gas did you use? How many kilometers to the liter did you get? And it's like, you have to think all the time. You're thinking shopping, and Susan had a lot of trouble in the restaurants. We go to a restaurant, it's like, what do you think that is? You know, Zebu. I'm like, I don't know. So, and just finding your way around. There's no names of streets. There's no street numbers. You stop and you get out and you ask people. So it's tough. My personal biggest challenge, because I was off the ship, I wasn't on the ship. I would leave most every day and take groups out. And even at the end, everywhere we went, my neighbor's uncle, my grandfather, my niece has something, you know, medical usually. And it's like, I'm sorry, we can't do anything for you. We're a surgical ship. We do maxillofacial things. We do orthopedic. You have cancer, can't help you. You have liver, we can't help. Kidney, and they could use a whole fleet of medical ships just to provide general medicine. But it was very difficult because people would come up, well, you're this big white guy and you got 30 Land Rovers out here and you got this ship and all this resource. You can't help us? I said, no, I can't help you. So for me, that was a big challenge. Next slide, please. What I did, I was the Mercy Ministries coordinator, and I took, when the people weren't working on the ship, they volunteered to work off the ship, basically, and we had seven sites that, it's a long story, but we identified them when we first got to the country. Usually that's done before by an advance team, but there was no advance. We just got there, and so I spent almost a month driving around and, hey, is there an old people's home somewhere, you know? And it's like, how do we get there? And so we saw seven places. One was the Maison de Retreat, and they're not very politically correct. They're just old. They call them old people. And then the Hope Center is a government hospital that Mercy Ships took over part of it and rehabbed it, and it's going to be 250 beds. This is where people, before they come to the ship, because people come for days, and then they get there, and we can't keep them on the ship, so we have this other place where they stay before as well as after. And most everybody comes with somebody, so they sleep under the bed on the ship. If you're like a child, your mother will sleep under your bed. In the Hope Center, they'll sleep under the beds. And we used to go to the hospital bay, which means the big hospital, the pediatric ward on Tuesday nights, a deaf school, a school for the handicapped, and we went to the local prison. You don't want to go there. Where's my son, Matthew? You're back there. You don't want to see what their prison looks like. They don't even have flat screen TVs. They don't even have water. So, and then we went to the Ankarif Children's Bush Home, which was probably the favorite spot. So I have pictures from some of them, but some of them, like the hospital and the prison, we're not allowed to take pictures. So let's see, the first one is the old, oh, I'm sorry, this is my team. They really did all the work. From your left to right, my left also, is Claudia. She's Malagasy, she's 28. She speaks a whole bunch of languages. She's a chaplain for the hospital, and she used to work for me on Tuesday nights coming to the hospital and then on Saturdays at the prison. And then next to her in the blue jeans with the white top is Marina, and we'll talk more about her. She really was the brains behind everything. Mike, don't do that, Mike. She used to keep me in line. She's 21 years old. On her birthday, she went on a boat ride with us, her first boat ride. She'd never been on a ship. She'd never been on a helicopter, which we'll get to. She speaks English, French, Spanish, some German, Malagasy, a little bit of Hebrew now. And she taught me more about PowerPoint and things than she's incredible. And next to her is Rutu. And Rutu doesn't speak English. She speaks French and Malagasy, and she was our river guide. She works for one of the missionaries there, and she's just awesome with the children. And the guy on the right, I still can't pronounce his name, but so we nicknamed him AR. It's like Aureline, but I never said it right. So we just call him AR. They're very active, and that's the truck we primarily used in the background is a Land Rover. They go through anything with total discomfort, so... Okay, next slide. This is Marina. I told you a little about her. She speaks multiple languages. She weighs, I can tell you because there's no HIPAA, but because she was at the crew clinic, she weighs basically 84 pounds, I think. And she so desperately wants to gain weight. She sings like an angel. She plays the drums. The guitar. Yeah. Well, Susan almost got her into a suitcase, so it would have just been slightly overweight, but she really blossomed. At first, she lived with her cousins. She lives in the capital city. Her father's an air traffic controller, actually. I met him when we were leaving, but she came, her cousin who lived in our city, told them about the job, and she came. So she lived with her cousin and the husband, and their three kids, and plus her is six, and their house was 3 meters by 3 meters, which is, it's basically about 10 feet by 10 feet. And I remember I was complaining, Susan was saying how we shared everything, like we shared 10 washing machines for 450 people. You had to sign up, and there's only very limited, and I'm like, oh man, I couldn't get a washing machine today. And Marina would go, it's Friday. I'm going to be washing them by hand. And her clothes always look better than ours, I think, you know. So next slide, please. And there's everybody together with the ship in the background. Next slide. And here we are at the old people's home. The guy on the upper left, Mr. Michelle in the white t-shirt, passed away, unfortunately, about 6 weeks ago. The lady on the lower right is, her name is Yvette. I can't even begin to describe her, but she was just a very strange character. And the lady with the they probably thought the same about me, but the lady in the colored, her name was Kiki, and she would clap and sing, and it was a pretty laid-back ministry. We just used to kind of go and hang out with them. Nobody else did, so they liked when we came. Next slide. And then there's Kiki again, and I forget the friend Francesca. And then this lady in the upper left, she was the star. Her name is Marie. She's probably the oldest person in Madagascar. She's like 95, I think, or something. And the lady that runs the place said that she found her a few years ago. Her children had taken her pension and kept her locked up in a box, and they gave her a little bit of rice and water. And for 6 years, they had her locked in this, like, cage. And You think Marina was small. She probably weighed 50 pounds. Her feet couldn't even come near the floor in her wheelchair. And she would come out, and it's like, oh, don't touch me. You know, and she had her bags, and you can see she's got, like, her arm through her purse. Don't touch her bags, because she thought every day somebody was coming to pick her up. So, we used to like to, this is probably not good to say, we'd give her rum, the people there would give her, because she would loosen up, and then she would start singing, and she'd start doing, and this is 9 o'clock in the morning, because... And one time we got there, where's Marie? She's drunk and she's in bed. But if you're 95, you know, next slide. And then this is, I forget her name. She was a wife of one of the surgeons that came with me, and she did foot washing. And it was just a special time. Next slide. And then we went to this deaf school. And there's a lot of jokes about that. So this was run by a Lutheran group. They're quite smart, and boy, they don't miss a clue, I mean, because they're very visual, and it's like they would, every time I would bring a team, maybe the 10 or 12 of them would stand up in front, and they would give them a name in sign language. So if they saw you had like a little zit over there, they go, yeah, 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 zit, zit, you know, you're the zit lady, you know, and it's, next slide, and this is some of the crew. Again, we're old, and most of the crew is young, as you can tell. If you saw Marta with Samboni, she's from Northeast Indiana. And I don't know where these girls are from right off the top of my head, but we did different Bible stories with them. They all knew the Bible, and we played games and lots of fun. Next slide. And then this is the Ann Carief Children's Bush Home, and this was the every Saturday trip, and this was a long trip. We would leave, we'd spend 3 hours on the river on a little boat going there, and then we would spend the 2 hours there and then 3 hours back. And it was pretty much, this is the only thing we charged for because of the boat. It was full every Saturday, and the kids, it was like you get there was only about 15 kids in the orphanage, but like 115 kids would show up when we got there. The whole village would come, and people would say, gee, I go, okay, let me run it down for you. You can take pictures. There's no bathrooms, there's no water, there's no electricity, there's no Starbucks, there's no, and we were going through this, and they're like, okay, and it's like, you'll see, because I went there once by myself, and then we went the first time in a different boat, and we broke down, and we paddled for, I think, 3 hours before we got a tow. It was a long, long day. But anyways, the kids are great. Next slide. And, you know, we did bag races. We did Bible stories, tug of war. I was kind of the keeper of the toys. I had everything, you know. Next slide. And that Ann Carief Children's Bush Home. This lady on the left, on the upper left, well, she's pretty young, but she was one of the palliative care nurses on the ship. There was only two. And then Marina's on the far right in the yellow. And then this lady, her name is Yvonne. She's from Belgium. I think she comes to the ship every year. I'm not sure. She is a very nice lady and just with a servant's heart. But the first time I went there and I'm with the missionary, he goes, okay, so they're going to serve us lunch. And I'm like, I haven't been feeling good already, you know. And it's like, you've got to eat. I'm like, well, just tell him I'm really not that hungry, but it's like, well, you got to eat. And I was like, okay, we're going to do this. And I ate this chicken and rice stuff in their little hut with the chickens running underneath. You can see the, and I was fine. Actually, I was better after that than I was before. So next slide. This is Cisco, the boy, not the girl. She's from Belgium also. She worked in communications, but They, when we would get there, they would do this dance. They'd all be in a big circle, and it was basically, it's like they clapped their hands and they'd sing, and it's like, okay, Paul, Paul, you come out. And they would come out, and they would, you know, one kid would dance around. Well, I mean, these 1 and 2 year old kids would come out, and like they would put all of us to shame with their dancing ability. They'd be, you know, really getting down. Next slide. And then when we would leave, they would help us push the boat out. And next slide, even the little ones, they were, you can see that even their teeth aren't that good. And then the next slide. And then the whole, you know, usually there's a big crowd that they'd come out to say goodbye because they don't get too many visitors on the river. There's no other way there. Because I would tell people, there's no 911, there's no, you know, the only way out of here is on this boat, and it's 3 hours, and so there's certain risk. Next slide. So for me, the numbers, because a lot of things we do on Mercy Ship are all about the numbers. We keep spreadsheets, and we fill out, after each event, each team I take out, I have to fill out a form. I took out 142 teams while we were there in roughly 5 months. Next slide. We had over like 1,300 plus crew participate. Many of them were multiple times, like Marta, the one from the Samboni film, the nurse there. She went out with me a lot, maybe 8 or 10 times, but took a lot of people out. Next slide. And we figure we left 33,000 plus fingerprints, many over and over on the same people, because we kept touching them, you know. But so we hope we impacted a lot of people. It's the only job I could do on the ship. I mean, the medical part, after standing in this surgery thing for a few minutes, I figured that wasn't for me. And the kitchen certainly wasn't for me, and washing dishes wasn't for me. And I did have a tour of the engine room, and that wasn't for me. And I did steer the ship for a few minutes, but that job was already taken. So it was good, because being on the ship, it's kind of claustrophobic, and there's just a lot of people, and there's lots of drama and gossip. And so it was much better for me to every day, bye-bye, we'll see you later. Next slide. Okay, so here's the helium mission. These are, besides what I did, there were some other jobs projects that I did. The people that run the Children's Bush Home, he has 35 clinics around the country, and clinic and what your mind clinic is and what their clinic is two different clinics. So I said, you know, I think I'd like to do something for you. He says, well, we're trying to build a new clinic, our 36th clinic, and we need $4,000, and that will buy us the land and build the building and get the medicine and train the sort of nursey type person. They call him a health agent. And I says, I think we can do that, you know? So I was told the biggest crew offering was like $2,500. On Thursday nights, we had like a meeting and little worship. And he said, usually we would collect $1,500 to $2,500. So we talked about this Bush clinic, and we ended up, the crew gave $6,200 to build one clinic and then to refurbish another clinic. And anyways, so we gave them the money, and great, everything's good. And then my boss, like a month or two later, says, you need to get some pictures of this clinic, you know, to make it legit and stuff. You know, not that they're, you know, you never know. They try to be very careful on what they give. So I was like, okay. So I went to the missionary. I says, Francis, I says, we need to see that clinic. He says, okay. He says, it takes about 2.5 days to get there. I go, oh, okay. So a day in the truck, a day on the river, and a half a day walking. And then you turn that around to come back, too. And I'm like, okay. And then he says, well, if you wait, he says, the helium missionaries, they were already working there. They were bringing people in from very remote areas. He says, they're going to be here taking some of our doctors to some of the clinics. And, you know, you could ride along. We'll take you up to that village. So this was just about 4 weeks ago, I think. Susan and I and Marina, we never went anywhere without Marina. She was handy to have. So 2.5 days in this machine, 8 minutes. So here we are in the helicopter getting ready to go, and then the doctor is this guy in the yellow shirt that's kind of half and half cut off. Next slide. And then, I don't know, he's kind of black, so I don't know if you can see him real well. His name is Francis, and he's a missionary. He's from Benin, and he's a great guy, and he's got all kinds of things going, and whatever you need, it's like whatever he can do for you, and he's always smiling. And but you can see out the window some of the countryside. It's like, it's rough terrain. Next slide. That's the clinic going up. It's maybe 20 by 10. They were very proud of it. Next slide. And then this fellow on the far left, the white one, is the helicopter pilot. I wanted to take good care of him. once we were there, because I figured he was our only way out. I kind of watched, because I got to sit next to him. I wanted to see what he was doing, just in case. And then the doctor was kind of preaching a little bit, and the short man, of course, is Malagasy, and he is the president of the village, and then that's Francis. And I got to pray over and bless the clinic as well. Next slide. And then it takes a village. They actually are not afraid of the helicopter, because the helicopter comes like every quarter, but I guess they've taken some people to the city, and then they have to put them in like a truck or a car, and they're like freaked out. But they don't get too freaked out by the helicopter. So next slide. So some of the other noteworthy things is we had prison church. Again, Matthew, you don't want to be in their prison, but we went in. I remember the first time I went in with Marine, it was just Marine and I and another translator. There's like 1,000 men behind these walls, and it's like 100 degrees, and we're walking through the prison yard, and she's like, or I think that was me, and she was probably doing, and I was like, are we safe here? Is this okay? We never had a problem anywhere, anytime, anywhere, anything, no matter where we went. I got stopped by the police once just recently, and it's like, mercy ships, oh, go ahead. We were invited by the president and welcomed very much. Did a Seder dinner. We participated in their local churches. Francis, the missionary from Benin, they put on a concert to raise funds for patient transportation. And they had over 1,000 people come. They brought in some choirs that you thought it was good as Brooklyn Tabernacle, didn't you, Susan? They were awesome. And the place was rocking. They had everything going, and then, of course, the power goes out because they don't have much power, and nothing stopped. I mean, it's dark, and people are singing and dancing, and it was a big deal for them. It took a lot of work to put this thing together, and I think they gave us, it sounds like nothing, like $200, but they came up with it. And they were doing a texting program, like here, like after a tornado or something, you text ABC to the Red Cross and it takes $10. They were doing like 50 cents. You know, they had a program through the country because they really want the people to participate. We're working on a Christian radio station license. That's a God story, how that all came about. They've had the equipment, but they can't get the license. And this Francis guy told me about it, and I talked to the government liaison on the ship, and of course, like 3 days later, the Ministry of Communications from Madagascar is visiting the ship. So, don't know how that works. And many of the Mercy Ministry sites that we went to, we got them dental care and eye care. We had some car seats and strollers for people in the city, blankets, clothing, hand towels, sewing machines, some electric, some, you know, the old pump kind. And if you're familiar with Samaritan Purse, the shoebox program that they do, they have like boxes for girls 2 to 5 and boys, you know, all different ages by gender. And those were big hits at the hospital. We didn't want to look like the only reason we came was to give them stuff, particularly at the beginning. We gave nothing at the beginning. And then we would start giving them things, and so it worked out nice. Next slide. So, this is the Africa Mercy sitting in the port dock. On the lower far left, you can see some of the trucks that we used. And we were blessed by rainbows quite regularly. I don't think I've seen so many rainbows in my entire life as I saw in a couple months there. And I think there's a picture of a rainbow. It wasn't at sea, because the ship is a couple of days out of Durban right now, going into dry dock. And there was like a double rainbow. They're sending pictures from the ship of this rainbow. So not sure what that's about. But thank you all for your support. It's hard out there. I think probably in January, if the airport wouldn't have been 8 hours away, we would have been gone. And some people have asked, well, you know, we thought you were staying 2 years, and that's what we thought we were going to do. Physically, I couldn't do it. I don't consider myself, I'm 61 years old. I don't consider myself in bad shape, but physically I couldn't do it. There's stairs everywhere. There's no elevators on this ship. I probably some days walked up 50, 75 flights of stairs. Every time I went off the ship, it's three stories down and three stories up and up and down and up. Just physically exhausting. So physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, there's just a lot of stuff going on. You can feel it sometimes. You go to different places. It's like, are we supposed to be here? And many times I know we talked about, what are we doing here? Why are we here? Are we making a difference? And then I think what happened so many times, and for some reason, I'm looking at you two out there, Warners, but when we were in Haiti, and Haiti was tough, especially for me, I hate Haiti. I told the guy I love Haiti, but I hate Haiti. I'm never going back, ever. And I remember it was tough in Haiti, and we got our first support money. So you never know, we get these email like, man, we're ready to go. This person's driving me nuts. This one's doing this. This isn't working here. I got diarrhea again, And it's like, and then you get an email or you get a text sometimes or, whatever it was, some sort of a little thing. And I always call it the 11:59 God. He never comes at 10:30 to help you out. He only comes at the last minute, It's like, we're ready to pack. We can get out of here. And then it's like, oh, here's this, or oh, here's that, or, just something. So again, if you don't believe in God, come to the ship and see, because it can't possibly work. I've thought about it. I've talked about it. It does not work. There's no sense how this thing works, but somehow it does. So hopefully God will bless you richly, all of you. It was a blessing for us to go. We thank you for your prayers. And I've said this before, we've been on a number of short-term trips. Years ago, I remember being at church and missionaries would get up, oh, thank you, we need your prayers and we need your money. I'm like, no, you just need our money. It's like, no, when you're out there, you need the prayers. You really do. I don't think anybody on the ship, except during the sail, I think a couple broken bones, but nobody on the ship, nobody got really sick, nobody got hurt. I think I was the only one in an automobile accident. I got hit by a motorcycle, and we were fine. We were in one of these Land Rover tanks, so it didn't matter to us. But the whole bill, the emergency room bill was $6, and the to fix his motorcycle was $40, and we had ice cream afterwards. So it was all taken care of. It was pretty interesting. But Mercy Ships, okay. So we'd love to tell you more. There's all kinds of stories, all kinds of God stories, and just incredible stories of, because I worked as the screening site commander, they called me when we first got there. The first day, we had 3,000 people line up to get screened. And you see people with, what do you call that? I don't even know what to call it, that thing, And it's like, they're just there, and they're hoping for something. And you don't know what they're hoping for. And unfortunately, maybe one out of the 10 get through. The other nine, they pray with them, and a lot of them leave crying, because they can't help them. But then, 2 months later, I remember you. It's like, wow, you're looking pretty good. And that T-shirt from Naperville, from the Edwards Health Club, there's a kid named Norbert. I found this T-shirt. I stole this T-shirt from that health club before we left, and I carried it, and this kid was wearing a girl's blue pajama top for every day I saw him for weeks, and I'm like, I can't stand that anymore. There's got to be some. So then I felt maybe that's why I stole this shirt. So maybe the ends justified the means. I don't. It was sitting there, Julene, right on the bench, and nobody was in the locker room, and I just took it, and it was like, so he doesn't know that Norbert's wearing his shirt, but Norbert couldn't walk, and then Norbert had surgery, and then they had him like on a little scooter thing, and then he was on crutches, and then he comes running up to you, you know? It's like, so you get to see this, just like you see Sambani. You get to see all this, and you know, some people are relatively quick. They have tremendous cleft lip and palates, adults, and they fix them, and it's, you know, it's amazing what they do. So, next slide. Hopefully. I have a very, very brief message. My favorite passage in the Bible is from Hebrews 11, and it talks about faith, and faith is the assurance and confidence in the things unseen, like the words, and something like that. Does somebody have Hebrews 11 open? Can you find it? I'd bring it up on my phone, but I was afraid Paul would Skype me while I was up here. So. That is one of the cool things nowadays. I mean, it's pretty much you're in constant contact with everybody. So, does anybody have Hebrews 11, 1? Oh, good. Do you have my glasses too? No, I don't need my glasses.
Okay. Let me just say one thing. He looked out to his son twice every time he mentioned a prison. His son's not in trouble. He's a law enforcement officer. I just want to. Heidi's like, you got to tell him that.
Okay. Now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain for what we do not see. That's my favorite thing. And, you know, I think back in the story of Mercy Ships, there's a guy named Don Stevens. He's 70 years old. He still kind of runs the show from Texas. And like 35 years ago, God told him to build a ship and make it a hospital ship and go to Africa. And nobody's done this before, and nobody's done it since, but he decided to do it. And Susan said, well, like the reason she came is because the Bible says, you know, Matthew, that's what she was supposed to do. I had a different experience. I was sitting in church one day and God said, you're going to Mercy Ship. And this was March of about 5 years ago. And it's been a journey, you know, getting there and Ebola and selling houses and getting rid of stuff. And we got there. And I know a friend of mine out in Las Vegas. He is like, I don't know why you're doing this. I don't understand. Why would you do this? And somebody else I know, he made a comment a while back. He says, well, so you're just putting everything on hold to do this? And then somebody else said, are you giving up like a year of your life or 2 years of your life? And we never thought of it that way. We were giving anything up because we got a whole lot more than we gave up. So, but I was thinking about that, and I'm not comparing Don Stevens or myself to the people in the Bible that I'm going to talk about real quickly, but this is the reason why, because kind of God told me you're supposed to do this, so I figured we better do it. And then I was thinking, I keep reading about Abraham. So Abraham, it's like, I want you to sacrifice your son Isaac. And it's like, Then I was thinking about it. He takes his son and the knife and the wood and the servants. For 3 days he's walking, and he's got to be thinking, I'm going to sacrifice my son. I mean, he had time to think about it. It wasn't like, go do it right now. It's like, and he leaves the servants, and he says, you wait here, and then he goes, and he's going to sacrifice his son. And the son's like, so where's the goat, Dad? And he's probably going, you're the goat, you know? And he's ready to do it. I think it says he lifts his knife or something, and then God says, don't do it. But do you think people must, if they knew what Abraham was to, they might have said, oh man, you'd probably go to jail maybe. Very strange. So, and then with Abraham and Sarah, it's like, so you're going to have a baby and you're 92 or something. And she's like, yeah, right. So we're going to name the baby Isaac because it kind of means laughter, I think, in Jewish. If God tells you something, you should probably need to listen. And then my favorite story is Noah. So Noah's a couple hundred years old, and then they don't know what rain is. They've never seen rain. They live in a desert. They don't know what an ark is. And I believe, depending on what you read, it took them roughly 100 years to build it. It wasn't a quick job.
So kids, on your way home from school, why don't you bypass Noah's house because he's, you know, the guy's building this big boat, you know, and it's like, and he's got plans from God told him to do it. Do you think he was not mocked and ridiculed? And it just blows my mind. But he stuck with it for like 100 years to build this ark because God told him to do it. And then the other one, the last one, is in Exodus when they're, you know, Moses leading the people, and they've got the pillar of fire leading them in the at night, and the pillar, the cloud, leading them during the day. And they get up to the Red Sea, and now, like, okay, so now what do, Moses? We're a little upset because the Egyptians are right on our tail. It's like, raise your staff, and the seas will part. Well, could you imagine if he went and he said, Paul, by the way, could you raise your staff out here on 55th Street where it's flooded and the waters will part? They're going to like, you're out of here, you know. We're going to take you someplace else. But he did it, and then it's like walk, and as they walked, you know, the water parted. So this idea of faith about this stuff that's unseen, you know, how do we know? We don't know. How do we know? I don't know why we went to Mercy Ship. I don't know what we were supposed to accomplish. Was it one person? Was it a bunch of people? I don't know. I wonder. I don't know if I'll know in this life. I don't know if I'll know in the next life, you know, and I don't know if I'm supposed to know. And as Paul's sister-in-law, Carol Glyman, many of you know her, would say, well, when you get to heaven, you probably won't care, you know, so maybe not. But right now I care. I'd like to know what the plan was. Where did we fit into this whole thing? So my challenge, I guess, to each of you is, if you feel that God's calling you to something, you know, maybe you've had this little, like, voice going for a month, a year, 5 years. Maybe it's just calling your neighbor or bringing your neighbor's garbage can in, or, you know, inviting somebody to lunch or for a cup of coffee, or jumping on an airplane and going to, I still don't know how we stand down there because we're in the southern hemisphere, you know, how we stood up there. But anyways, whatever he's calling you to do, maybe it's to go to Appalachia. I don't know. Are you going in July? Probably, you know. You don't have to go to Madagascar. You don't have to go to Appalachia. You can, where you work, at the next desk, at the next machine. If you work somewhere with a machine, if you work in a retail store, maybe it's the next customer that comes up. You don't know what it's supposed to be, but have faith that God has a plan for your life, and he didn't make any mistakes, and I don't believe in a whole lot of coincidence, and some maybe, but I call it God incidents. It's like, there's a reason that happened, and if you just kind of tune in and take him up on his challenge, you might be pleasantly blessed yourself. So, Paul, are you going to pray? Please? Here.
Let's pray. Yeah. Great job. Thanks for sharing your hearts. And that really was a brief message out of Hebrews 11. But my hunch is you didn't get all the stories right there. And so maybe while you're having some, we have a pig roast. It's a kosher pig just for you, Mike. Okay, we got a nice kosher pig for you. But I'm sure they've got a lot more stories to tell. And as the days go by, you're going to understand more of your time there, and you'll have time to reflect on it. Let's take a moment and pray. Father, we ask that you would bless Mike and Susan as they readjust to life here, which is their home. Father, order their steps. Father, you know the things that need replenishment in their lives. We pray you'd bring that to them. Lord, thank you that we could partner with them this past year, and I know that there were many photos that moved me, just seeing the faces of people that you love, Lord, and that in Jesus' name, you used Mike and Susan and the team they were a part of to touch them. Lord, help us to see people around us the way you do. Help us to love them. Use our lives to touch them. Father, if there's anybody here today who would say, this causes me to take a step closer to you. Maybe somebody's ready today to say, Jesus, I think you're real, and I want you alive and at work in my life. If you talk to him about that today, he'll come into your life. Lord, thanks for being with us here. We pray these things in your name. Amen. I want to invite you to stand. We're going to sing a final song, and then I'll give the benediction.